You have found Authentic Business Adventures, a business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie, and today I'm excited because we have Adam from AF Construction, and Adam's going to tell us about all the fun that happens when you start, build, and grow a construction company. So, Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks.
So, let's start out with the beginning here. How long has AF Construction been around?
Since 2005.
2005, okay, so you've seen some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that means 2008, that whole crash where a lot of companies didn't make it, I guess, as far as that goes.
Yep, I was pretty small at that point,
okay.
So it was a little bit easier to navigate through mm-hmm. that mess.
All right.
Being in Madison area, kind of protected in like a bubble.
Yeah, a little
cushioned. So it didn't really impact right away of that, debacle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it didn't really put too much pressure on us, but we noticed if you were specific in what trade you were in, you mm-hmm. would be more affected. So that allowed me to just become a little bit more versatile.
Okay.
And do more things. And if I didn't know it, I was willing to learn how to do it.
Fair. Totally fair. So prior to you starting your business, what were you doing before?
So I grew up in the trades with my dad, and we did flooring.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up doing flooring with him for many years.
Okay, carpet, wood, tile, or
yep, anything? Everything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we would go in and do that, and then after high school, I started getting a little bit more anxious and wanting to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of switched from working with my dad and went to work for a remodeling company for about 5 years, and that's where I learned the bulk of my remodeling skills.
Gotcha, okay. And at what point did you decide, hey, I'm going to go off on my own versus continuing to be an employee?
Well, being that I was self-employed for flooring, it was a lot easier for me to make an income,
mm-hmm.
whereas when I went to work for somebody else, I was kind of, at their price point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew where I was, and I actually came down a little bit in wages and then just tried to make it work, and it gets tough. So I had to make a change. I wanted to go back to school.
Okay.
So I tried
for construction or for
Real estate.
Okay.
So I went back to school for real estate, and I tried to go full time, but when you're full time, you can't really pay bills. So,
no, well, not unless you sell something.
So then it kind of put the college back on the back burner for a little bit, and then I just decided to go off on my own. I knew enough, and
mm-hmm.
Started with one client.
All right. So when you start AF Construction, were you married at the time?
No.
No. Okay. So were you dating your wife now, or?
No.
No. Okay. Well, that makes it easy. So you didn't have to say, hey, funny story,
nope.
I quit my job or anything. You just
nope.
did it.
I was able to just do it.
Okay. Was mm-hmm. there any fear or challenge or unknowns that you were concerned with?
There's always fear at that point. I was still pretty young, so if I needed to, I could go back to my parents' house and stay with them.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. But I always wanted to live on my own, It's like freedom,
mm-hmm.
Hey,
I don't
live with my parents anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Nice. So you start your business, and at what point did you start marketing, and how did you do it when you first started in 2005?
I never really marketed myself at the beginning stages of my company. A lot of it, almost 100% of it was referral based.
Okay. So was it friends, family, stuff like that, or?
It started off with friends of family,
mm-hmm.
and then from there it just kind of slowly went on. But I also had a big circle of people that I knew from my previous business where I worked,
mm-hmm.
and it was a big enough circle that I could jump in with some of those guys, because some of those guys did branch off and go back to work for themselves.
Okay.
So I could go to work for them as well.
Gotcha.
And once I got a little bit more confident, I started reaching out to other builders and kind of got into the framing trade for a little bit.
All right. So just offering to do the framing for them so they could essentially...
Framing and whatever I could get my hands on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they could sub out to you. You'd have work and it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So when you first started your business, you're building it like that. Was it tougher doing work for friends and family or other coworkers and stuff like that because you had a relationship with them already? So if there was a challenge in the job, there may be a challenge in the friendship or the relationship or something like that?
Earlier on, I never really had that problem because, you know, I was pretty easygoing, mm-hmm. just wanted to get it done.
All right.
So I probably kept a lot of things to myself.
Okay. All right. So this job is going terrible, but nobody knows. All right. Fair. Now, construction, from what I understand, initially, like, you can be a guy with a van or whatever. You got a hammer and some tools. Not a big deal. But eventually, you have to grow to the point where you got trailer, you have employees, and there's capital that you have to spend.
Yes.
So at what point did you start growing where you really started sticking money in the business?
Well, in business, you always want to chase the money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want more money, you have to have other people help you.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say... you know, I was kind of doing that before 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when I went to 2005, I had friends that were my age that were in the trades as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to bring them in, and that kind of helped push us into a new category to that we could get bigger jobs, such as building complete houses.
Oh, nice. Okay. Do you remember the first house you built?
Yes.
All right. Was it in, I don't know, somewhere around here?
Yeah, close? In the Madison area.
All right. And was it one that you built for you or one that you built for someone else?
I built it for another builder.
Gotcha.
Framed it.
All right.
And then I believe that one we didn't side, we just framed it.
Okay. All right. And I imagine that had to be a huge learning experience starting from scratch like that.
It was a little nerve-wracking, but with a couple other friends that have been in the trades too, working for other companies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're all able to bounce our ideas off of each other.
Okay.
So that's helpful.
All right. And was there ever a time when they're like, hey, Adam, you're doing that all wrong?
Oh, you know, everybody has their moment.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
So
all right.
I've always tried to listen
mm-hmm.
to everybody's opinion and then make the final decision, which I think is the best.
Sure.
Because ultimately it always comes down to the customer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people that work for me are always... thinking like, yeah, I'm really picky, but you know, you kind of have to. You're doing a service for other people.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Anytime you outsource, it's got to be
mm-hmm.
it's got to be better than if you did it yourself.
Yeah.
I joke because we had we put up a ceiling fan. We put up a ceiling fan in our house. It was a replacement for an existing ceiling fan in our house. It was just a old looking one. And the base of it was smaller than the old one.
Yeah.
And I always joke that home projects get 95% done within a couple days, and then that last 5% could be years.
Yeah.
So we just had that little circle that was around the perimeter of the base of the fan that was the old ceiling color, and it's just a circle, and we're like, hey, we should paint that. We don't have the paint, so we just, there's that ring that snaps on there. That ring stayed dangling on the fan for at least 7 years.
Funny.
And then my wife's like, we should get whatever, certain stuff painted. And I'm like, we should probably get that ceiling painted. And then ceiling gets painted, snap, like that's all it was.
Yeah.
7 years that thing laid there. And it's just, yeah, if I were to pay someone to install that ceiling fan, well, one, I don't even know if you could do that now. They'd probably tell me, like, we need 5,000 more projects to do to justify that.
Yeah.
But anyways, if a professional were to do it, they presumably would just finish it.
Yeah, it would be done.
Yeah.
And if it was something they didn't do, they probably would recommend, hey, you need to paint the rest
of
the ceiling.
Hire the painter guy now so we can finish this thing.
So funny story to that would be, you know, a carpenter usually never has their whole house completed. There's always something lingering on for mm-hmm. many years.
Mm-hmm.
Our first house that we bought, I was fortunate enough to build it through one of the builders I was working for.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't finish that whole house until we decided to sell it.
Oh, funny. We should probably finish it. We're going to move.
And then another funny story was yesterday I went out on a job lead and I get to the house and the couple that called me over, the husband was a landscaper.
Okay.
And, you know, immediately I was drawn into a lot of his landscaping, and I'm like, oh, these are beautiful steps you have. And she's like, oh yeah, my husband's a landscaper. Well then, about 3/4 of the way through the tour of what they wanted me to come in and look at, mm-hmm. we get around to the other side of the house, and the landscaping and the skirting around the house didn't have any stones in it.
Oh.
And it looked like it needed to be finished. And I was like, oh, you know, once a landscaper, always a landscaper, you know, kind of like, you know, that profession mm-hmm. may not want to work on their house. And that's right. kind of how I feel, is like, I don't always want to come home and work on my house, so I leave those jobs unfinished sometimes.
Right, right. Is that the cobbler's kid's shoes or something like that? That's awesome. So at what point did you add your first employee? Because that had to be a big decision.
So in the beginning, we would work with like other subcontractors. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then once the jobs kept getting more and more, and they were getting in the higher price ranges, it was time to, you know, make that big step mm-hmm. of actually making them an employee. So I needed to make sure I had all the insurances to go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably did that maybe 4 years ago now.
Okay. And how did you figure out how to interview and how to qualify someone for doing a job like this? That's a mistake, can be very expensive, and it can cost a customer. Like, how do you test the skills of an employee for something like this?
It's hard, because you want to trust them up front,
mm-hmm.
And believe everything that they say. But what I've learned over the last, you know, couple of years is that not everybody is 100% honest when it comes to what they've done in the past. So, you know, I've learned that I just need to be cautious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm happy to enter an agreement with them and bring them on board. Yeah. But I try to do a probation period with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still learning, you know, what is that probation period?
Sure.
You know, I think within the first couple of weeks, I get a pretty good idea of what they're capable of doing.
Right.
And at that point, if they're worthy enough to hang on to, we start investing a lot of our energy to teach them how we do things.
Gotcha. All right. Interesting. Yeah, it's got to be tough. Has it been tough to find employees since
yes.
you started? Okay.
Yeah.
And what has been the limiting factor? Is it skill set, or is it personality, or is
it's pretty well-rounded. You know, sometimes it comes down to money. You know, a lot of times it comes down to the employees not showing up.
Oh, there's that.
That's a big one.
Whoa, who knew?
Yeah.
All right, has it been... I mean, we've had that with my businesses, where I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Where you take on a job, and then just one day you decide not to come back.
Yeah.
Sometimes that day is the first day of work.
Some guys would like to show up like 5 to 10 minutes late every day. Some people would like to call within 5 minutes of, you know, 7 a.m. when we start and say they're not coming. And you know, it just makes it difficult, because now you got to juggle everything, or maybe you got to call the client and say, hey, our plan's changed. And, you know, it just starts a trickle effect. And we try to eliminate that.
Yeah. I want to ask you something that I still don't understand with construction, how you guys schedule stuff. You have to be juggling multiple jobs.
Yes.
Because if there's a subcontractor you're waiting on, or there's parts or pieces that you're waiting on, or something like that, you can't just say, hey guys, go home, we're not paying you for today.
Right.
You have to be able to move between jobs, but you also have to keep jobs going.
Right.
And appease the clients that assume that that deck or whatever it is you're building is the only project that you have until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you juggle that, keep clients informed, keep your work people busy, and not go crazy?
It's really hard, because the more people that we have working for amplifies that.
Right, totally.
So I have 6 employees right now, so we need to run like 4 to 6 jobs at a time. Just this past winter, we learned that, you know, we can't just stack them all like on top of each other, because if you get a delay in one over here, it affects it, and it's a domino effect all the way through all
wave,
of them.
That wave.
So we're learning that we just need to communicate a little bit better and upfront.
With each other? With clients?
The clients.
Okay.
And that will help smooth things over a little bit, you know, a little bit more tolerable. But, you know, just, you know, I'm a client too to somebody else.
Right.
So I always try to think of how they would feel if I was in that situation.
Right. Right. So you do your best essentially to lay the expectation.
Yeah.
Like, this is what the plan is.
Yeah.
And these are the things that could cause that plan to deviate.
Yep.
Things that are outside of our control.
Yeah.
Things like wood shortages.
Wood shortages, yeah. Yeah. Windows, cabinets, you know, anything with metal, plumbing, electrical, just about everything is in our industry right now a bit of a challenge to get.
You know, it's funny. I went, I'm trying to think when this was. This is probably 3 months ago. I went to the local builder supply store, and I just needed to get some those the blue boxes that you just nail in the stud. Just going to add a couple outlets in our basement.
Yep.
And I thought, no big deal, just another day. And I walk into that aisle, and it's pretty much empty.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
We're talking like plastic and a couple nails.
Like 50 cents.
Yeah, yeah, like 19 cents.
Yeah.
One of those just like, how can this be empty? And I was thinking, is that many people are building? Or is that whatever factory pumps these out decided that they're going to close down? And I thought, well, how many of these could they make in a day?
Yeah.
You're just trying to go through that how it's made video, right? Like, they're making these things by the gazillions every single day. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's still the case, but it was one of those things, like, I don't even know. I don't even know.
A lot of our vendors are hanging on to their stock. Like, they won't sell it to somebody over the phone anymore. So they, like, keep it for, like, say, me, the contractor, who always does business with them.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we were just looking for some window wells yesterday.
Okay.
And the ones that we wanted were no longer there, the wrong color.
So, oh, no.
We asked a client, they're okay changing the color to a different, you know, tan color.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was talking to my sales guy, and I'm like, well, can we go get them from somewhere else? So he made a couple phone calls, and that was the true story right there, where they have them.
Yeah, but they won't sell them to you.
But they won't sell them to you.
Wow. That is just a weird, like, I feel like customer service as a whole has kind of been taking this nosedive.
Yeah.
Just universally. And stuff like that just makes you think, like, I have money, you have a product, your business plan is to sell that product to people with money.
Yeah.
I feel like we could solve this. At this moment right now, everybody would be happy.
Yeah.
But they're holding on to it for the hopes that maybe one of the other...
Well, you know, I mean, in the housing industry, you have the new construction market, right? So, like... They have customers who repeatedly need the same product over and over and over. Let's say they sold like 10 houses. So, you know, I see it from their vision. Like, they want to keep that person busy. But yes, it makes it frustrating on my end that I do some work with them, but I can't have their product right now.
Yeah, it just seems weird.
So now I'm waiting for the truckers to deliver something from Minnesota.
So I guess, where do you see, I'm going to ask you to tell the future here a little bit, because you're in the construction industry. We got wood that was crazy high prices. I don't know if it's psycho anymore. Maybe it is.
It's still really high prices. Okay. Take a 4x8 sheet of OSB. It's $50.
Okay.
When that stuff first came out, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, they couldn't even give it away.
That's essentially sawdust and glue, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep, and that's why the carpenters of the earlier days, they didn't like change, and that was a change. But in the long run, it was more, it was a better product.
Okay, just stronger?
It was stronger, because what happens is plywood, it's laminated in like five different ways, but once that gets wet, it separates.
Okay.
OSB doesn't do that.
Gotcha, because
there's
so much
glue in
it.
It has a lot more resiliency, it's compressed.
Okay.
It's a good product.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably right around $10 a sheet, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
Right before the big crazy markup.
Recently.
Recently.
So $10 to $50.
Yeah.
That's a margin.
A big jump.
And especially when you're talking essentially sawdust and glue.
Yeah.
Things that are like sawdust is essentially free for a wood.
Yeah.
A wood, I don't know what you would call them, saw place, whatever.
A mill.
A mill, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And then glue. I don't know how expensive glue is, but.
Right. Well, like the plant down in Texas, from what I've told, that supplies the glue for a lot of that product, that got shut down completely when that deep freeze made it south earlier this spring.
Oh. So there is actually a glue factory.
It messed up their whole factory, from what I've been told.
And we're talking one supplier?
One big facility.
Wow. That sounds like a sticky situation, right?
Yeah.
Boom. So as far as the other stuff, I guess I feel like from seeing these boxes that are missing, would be in high, I feel like in a few months or something like that, all of a sudden, all this product is going to show up and companies, manufacturers, are going to be ramped up where they were, and there's just going to be this glut of supply, and people like you just figured stuff out around it so you keep business moving. And I don't know what that'll do to prices or anything like that, but I guess where do
you
see...
Well, you would hope that they come down, but prices have been going up over the last, 5 years, just nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so. Companies get bigger, their margins have to go up a little bit.
But, sure.
Who knows?
Right.
To borrow money right now, it's pretty cheap.
It's very cheap.
So why wouldn't you want to build?
Right.
Remodel anything?
Right. That's true.
So
that's very true. So your industry, starting in 2005, you saw, I'm trying to think. We bought our first house, and I was excited to get 6.875% interest. Yep. I mean, like.
Mine was 7.5.
I beat it. I won. And now we're talking 2.5, probably skirting on 3%.
Yep.
And that's as they go up, which is
crazy. Yeah.
So it's interesting just to compare for the people that are new-ish.
If you do a 15-year, it even gets better.
Yeah. Yeah, which is cool. It's almost free money.
Right, almost.
Marginally. Except for the whole inflation thing and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Where do you see the construction industry going? Because it's got a fearsome pace right now.
I don't know.
Okay.
There's a lot of young people coming up that have been living in apartments and condos for a long time that want to build.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really see it slowing down at all, unless we're handcuffed by the high building prices for too much longer.
Sure.
Now, to go back on your question a little bit ago, I've been told that the market will probably start coming back, where the prices will be dropping a little bit, probably about late summer into fall.
Okay.
And that's just to get the factories back up online, hopefully get more people back to work.
Yeah.
And that'll help.
I feel like we're at the point where you can't blame pandemic anymore for today's problems.
No, I've tried to be a huge advocate to just, keep moving forward.
Yeah, right. Just like any smart business.
The only way we get back to normal is to move forward.
Right. Advance, progress.
Yep.
Cool. So you added some employees. At what point did you actually start marketing your business?
I don't really even know.
Or maybe let's back up a step and say, what triggered you to decide?
Well, as you grow and you bring more people on, you have to get outside or get out of front of the snowball that you're rolling in the snow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to stay ahead of that, I needed to find more places. The referrals just weren't working.
Right. So, not to the volume you needed.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I started looking at ways that I could market online.
Mm-hmm.
Google.
Mm-hmm.
The obvious.
Yeah.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Turned into one.
All right.
Obviously, the referrals, they're still talking.
Mm-hmm.
Those tend to be the best leads.
Okay. All right.
Because you're already in the door with the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Someone personable went to that person and said, hey, I trust this person. They did a wonderful job.
Right. Yeah, when they know that a job has already been done, especially in the construction industry, where I've chatted with people, contractors, that I kept thinking, man, how are you in business?
Yeah.
You can't. Like, I had one guy that was telling us that he walked away from a job and didn't tell the homeowner. And it was just one of those, like, I realized that I was upside down, so I just walked.
Yeah, like, right.
Can you do that? That doesn't seem right.
Unless it's an absolute worst case situation, I would never leave my job. I just couldn't feel good about myself unless I talked to other people and they're just convincing me that the right thing to do is just to walk away.
Right.
Cut your losses. Mm-hmm. But at least at that point, I would have told somebody, like, hey, we can't finish your job. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. To be fair, this guy was probably, I don't know, 90 years old or something like that. He'd been in the business forever. Probably not 90, 60 something. And physically looked broken.
Yeah.
Looked very broken. And maybe it was just like he was a one-man show and he'd been a one-man show for 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be tough.
Yeah.
Very tough.
Wearing the same hat for every position.
That's, And from my point of view, I'm like, that's not a business. That's a job. And a bad one at that, because you don't get paid vacation.
Right.
If you get vacation, you're probably in a hospital bed or something like that. Like,
very true.
That's not the goal.
It's hard for me to step out and not be communicating with somebody while I'm gone, which is fine. My family has kind of sacrificed a lot because I'm always so busy and being pulled in many directions.
Sure. Yeah, we all are. Mm-hmm. How do you work that with your family to say, hey, this is business, this is family, all that stuff?
Well, my wife is very forgiving, and my kids were pretty young, but now I don't really want to miss what I have left to enjoy for their childhood.
Right. Yeah, they're only young once, so.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you, are there times when you have to delegate, or how do you work around it?
Such as?
Like if you, let's just say you want to go to a kid's game or something like that.
Yeah. As long as I'm communicating, you know, a lot of clients are like, go do it.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So I learned, you know, communicating's big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meeting you
allowed
me to communicate even more, so.
Oh, man. That's,
thanks.
The rule, I guess, that I have that I've discovered, or learned probably the hard way, is that your communication, how well you do it, is a limiting factor in how well you do in business.
Mm-hmm.
The better you communicate, the better you can do in business. That's just a universal rule you could probably use in relationships, life, etc.
That's where I learned it from. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot easier to talk about the situation than just to be quiet and not talk about it.
Yeah.
So you kind of use that in business, too.
Totally.
You know, even if it's an uncomfortable situation.
Right.
But in the long run, after you have that conversation, usually the smiles come back and the handshakes are back.
Yeah. It is very easy to just rip off the Band-Aid, and usually, whether you have to talk to an employee about them dropping the ball or something like that, get rid of an employee, talk to a client about something that messed up, you have that conversation. It's typically, in my experience at least, it's that conversation is typically not nearly as bad as the anticipation of that conversation. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
I usually have like 10 conversations before that conversation.
Yeah, right.
I want everybody else's opinion.
All right.
And then I'll go in with my plan, and then the plan changes after you sit down and start talking.
Sure.
So
just figure it out.
You just figure it out and work through it.
Right. Adapt, improvise, move on. I like it. What marketing has worked for you, especially in the construction industry? I know there's a lot of contractors and stuff like that all over the country. And they're probably wondering, hey, you spent some money on marketing. What works?
Yep. So I found, you get what you pay for.
Okay.
But you have to be considerate. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to throw a lot of money into something because a little does go a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, internet has been great for a lot of businesses, and it still is. Mm-hmm. So we would use those apps, per se, and plug some coins into there.
Yeah.
Now I'm in the system.
Okay.
Let it work.
All right.
So you don't absolutely have to keep paying to play because you're already there.
Gotcha.
So my feeling is the more areas that you are on that surface, the odds are that something's going to link up and come your way.
Gotcha. You'll get found.
Yep.
All right. Tell me a little bit about your sales process, because I imagine people have to figure out if they trust you or not to do a big job, or kitchen remodel or something like that. It's not exactly cheap. They're going to be doing dishes out of their bathtub or whatever for, I don't know, months, weeks, whatever. So they want to know that they can trust you. How do you go about building that trust before the client signs?
Well, right now, the name of the game is to answer your phone.
Right? True story.
Contractors have a hard time answering the phone because it's overwhelming right now. Mm-hmm. It's just a nonstop, everyday phone call, one after another.
Yeah.
So
it's a good problem.
it's a great problem, and I seem to be capitalizing on it because we at least make that communication up front.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, wow, you know, I wasn't expecting you to pick up the phone.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. We live in a world where people are like, whoa, you want my money?
Yeah. Occasionally I'll get a text message that comes in.
Sure.
Those can be a little bit fake.
Okay.
So you just kind of weed them out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you schedule a meeting, I imagine, with the homeowner?
I like to try to get as much information up front from a client to make sure. Well, it helps me see where they're at in their decision-making process.
Gotcha.
If they're earlier on or if the checkbook is just burning a hole in their pocket.
Right, okay.
You know, it gives me that sense of urgency from them.
Okay.
And then I can, you know, plug them in from that point.
Gotcha. So if they're in the hopefully maybe someday phase?
Yep. We can stay in contact with them, but I don't need to be aggressive.
Gotcha. Okay. Or they're like, hey, grandma's coming to live with us. We need this kitchen remodeled in the next 6 months.
Yep. And then we go, wow, and do this, and I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Tell me from a timeline point of view. I don't even know what's realistic for a typical kitchen. Typical, right? That's pretty vague. But
well, you know, we were just talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. Cabinets are a huge delay right now.
Okay.
Windows, doors.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to do is get a lot of that figured out ahead of time.
Yeah.
And try to, maybe we shouldn't start this project until we get a little bit closer to when our product actually shows up, or just wait for the product to show up.
Oh.
And then dive in.
So you wait till cabinets, countertop, all that stuff is in a warehouse somewhere,
yep,
ready to go when you're ready to go.
Right.
So then the kitchen doesn't have to be half torn apart.
Yeah,
waiting for some shipment to show up.
8 months.
All right. Yeah, that's a long time to do dishes in a bathtub.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody wants to do that.
No. Interesting. So if you had all of the materials, I mean, I don't mean this to be a loaded question, but it almost seems like it is. If you had all the materials and all that jazz, how long does it take to get a kitchen redone? Cabinets, flooring, I don't know what all. I've never had a kitchen redone, so I don't know.
I guess a lot of that just depends on the size.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking really fancy,
mm-hmm,
you know, are you just replacing cabinets, or are you tearing down walls? Are you going to move switches? Is the plumbing changing?
Okay.
Like, all those factors come into play on your timeline.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then that's where the trouble comes, because then you got subcontractors, and then you have to deal with their schedules.
All right. And I imagine they're not the best communicators in the world.
Negative.
Probably worse than bad.
Usually the ones that are really expensive and really big names, they will tend to give you a better schedule.
Okay.
And if you miss that, then you're kind of at their mercy.
Gotcha. Okay.
But if you can stay out in front of that ahead and say, hey, we've got this, it's coming down, should be landing like Tuesday next week, are we still good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we keep plugging the ears, keeping that information in their mind,
yeah,
it helps get them to our projects faster.
All right. Well, that makes sense. That's very cool. I imagine that's why they're big, right?
Just
because they're good at communication.
Yeah. You know, I probably would say 4 to 6 weeks is a pretty good average.
Okay. That doesn't seem that bad.
No.
All right. Now, typical sales process, are people getting 50 quotes or whatever, or is it, what do they typically do?
Right now, we're seeing a variety of potential prospects.
Okay.
So some get more than one, which is great. You should have that knowledge.
Right.
It does help fine-tune what you actually want.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to go down my 10 questions that we ask each potential prospect,
mm-hmm,
and we ask those questions. Are you getting other quotes?
Mm-hmm.
If you are, do you mind telling us who they are? So then it kind of sets the stage of, you know, what level product that they want.
Okay. All right.
Because there's so much product out there, you don't know what people want.
Sure.
But are they in the high category, mm-hmm, the average, or don't care, just make it work category?
So they're like, hey, my uncle just got out of jail, and he said he's got a hammer, so we're getting a quote from him.
Yeah. Then I probably would pass.
Okay.
Because our overhead and our expenses and stuff that we pay for would just take us out of that circle.
And I would guess the quality of the work,
mm-hmm,
I imagine if Uncle found out that he has a hammer and just got out of prison,
yeah.
maybe his craftsmanship is not tip-top, but who knows?
I would say more than less right now, I can walk into some other houses that have had work done, and the quality has been pretty poor.
Okay.
Those are hard conversations to have with clients,
mm-hmm.
but 9 times out of 10, they know that they probably should have paid a little bit more attention to who they were hiring and what their costs were. They probably should have paid a little bit more. And then they wouldn't have been stuck with a low quality product.
Sure. Subpar end result. I feel like the whole construction, the contracts that you get for what the contractor is saying that you're going to receive is similar to buying insurance. Where you talk to an insurance broker, and insurance broker is like, hey, you got to look for this, that, and the other thing.
Yep.
I don't know of many people that actually read their insurance declarations page. That's one of the things I like to do just because it's kind of interesting and you're paying a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
But most people that I've talked to are like, insurance declarations page, or like, what is that?
Right.
And so the same thing probably with a construction contract where you're giving somebody something that outlines like, hey, this is what's covered by this, which means that it's probably difficult for potential clients to compare apples to apples, so to speak, when they're looking at getting a bathroom remodel or something like that.
Even if you are very descriptive in what they're getting, you still don't know if it's the same material that the next person's providing.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Unless, you know, some plans that, you know, you get with architects, you'll get it all laid out exactly what they want.
Okay.
Those are perfect plans to have. Then everybody knows exactly what we're bidding.
Okay.
So then it makes it really competitive.
Gotcha. All right.
Otherwise, we have our vision and we're trying to read what the prospect wants, and we try to fit them into what we think that they want.
Okay.
For their budget too. Obviously, that drives everything.
Oh, sure. Okay. And are people typically honest with their budget, or they try to withhold, or are they like...
You get it across the board with that.
Okay.
Some people, just the other day, I'm like, hey, do you have a budget? And they're like, yeah, we have a budget, but we would just like to hear where you think we should be.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
And basically at that point, I'm still willing to come out and basically sell myself and our products to try to fit them.
Yeah. I want to talk about the home improvement shows and stuff like that. Because I get this impression, talking from a lot of people in the construction trades, that people watch some rah-rah TV show where the bus moves, a house has been completely redone in a day or two, it costs $50 to redo the entire house. And so a lot of times these contractors seem to be getting these phone calls saying like, hey, I want my entire house redone and my budget is, you know, $6 or whatever.
Yeah.
Do people still have that illusion, or has that come around where people understand the cost?
Just yesterday I went out and visited a couple who wanted to do a Three Seasons porch. And I already told them ahead of time something to the size that they were explaining to me would be, you know, X amount of dollars to X amount of dollars. And, you know, I re-engaged him after that. He was going to talk it over with his wife. And then, you know, I could tell that he was a little scared because it was a lot of money. And we just weren't seeing eye to eye, but I felt, I'm like, well, I'll go meet him in person.
Sure.
You know, every story is a little bit different.
Right.
So it's a lot easier to see it in person and see how complex that project could be. But when I got there, I still wasn't that far off from where I was, but I was still trying to maybe potentially get them to work with us. However, he was still like half the cost in his mind.
Wow.
And at this point, materials might not have been that number. Probably would have been down a little bit, but there was, and I told him straight up, I'm like, my company, we can't do that.
Right.
And so, you know, we left on good terms and they'll talk about it, or maybe they'll save up for next year.
Right. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Interesting.
So that's why I like to always try to at least meet people.
Right. Okay. You get a feel for what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about when you're working with older houses, because I imagine especially, let's just say kitchen remodel, somebody wants a wall moved, and an older house, 80-year-old plus, whatever, maybe even not that old.
Yeah.
You find some stuff like, oh, we have mold, or we have whatever. X, Y, or Z. How do you deal with that when somebody's got a budget and all of a sudden we need more money to mop this mess up?
Well, thankfully, I grew up in the trades and I've seen a lot of old houses around the Madison area. So I have a pretty good idea of what might be behind that wall.
Okay.
Just by where what's placed, you know, in it or around it. And potentially what it's holding up.
Okay.
So, like I said, we try to look at everything up front so that we don't have problems on the back end of our deals.
Okay.
Because that's a lot harder to work on after you're working on the house and you have a big expense at the end and nobody's prepared for it.
Right. So, like the old houses with knob and tube wiring or something like that?
Yeah.
Take out a wall and you think, oh my God, huge fire hazard.
The good thing is typically when you're in these houses and you may have something torn apart that may be an old house, you already have that contractor in the house. So it's not like they're bidding it for the first time.
Sure.
So the costs tend to generally be a little bit easier on, on the clients.
Gotcha.
Unless it's something amazing and big and... Like, wow.
Because you're already there with people, with the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you have to do,
right.
you're right there already to do other stuff. So why not just do that?
Correct.
Got it. Got it. What have been some of the major challenges that you've had to deal with since you started your business?
Trying to adapt. Okay. Every day is different. And I always hope to learn something every day.
Right.
It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't even have to be work related.
All right.
So I try to use that as my energy. I've also known to take on new things. Maybe we haven't, you know, done it as much or not at all.
Right.
But I always feel the more that you know, the more that you can do.
Very true.
So if you get the one phone call that's going to save your business because you got to shut the doors, well, maybe that's that one thing that you can now do and do it.
That's cool. I like that. Have your employees grown with you, or how has that relationship been? The culture of the business, I guess, as far as that goes.
We're always changing.
All right. I asked that, and I'll tell you a little bit of backstory where that question came from. For a short stint in my life, 6 months, I drove a concrete truck. And every time I would go to a job site, there were people just yelling at each other. Just, it was constant yelling. I don't know if they even said hello without yelling. It was just a weird thing. And I'd be watching from the truck, you know, I got the chute and I'm dumping concrete for them to move around to make their driveway or whatever. And guys are just yelling at each other.
Yeah.
I'm like, how can you guys tolerate that? It just seemed like an odd thing until one day I ended up waiting downtown. We were doing a curb or something like that. My concrete ended up too thick. And I tried to dump it out the chute, and of course it just stacked up. So then I had to go up top of the truck and try to push that stuff out. And I was like, I get why you're yelling. This is hard work.
Yeah.
Stuff is heavy.
Yeah, some trades, they just need the job to get done. And you just speak loudly.
All right, so just bark in order.
You just bark it to get it because you don't have time to waste.
Okay.
Especially with concrete drying.
All right, yeah.
So the older generation, that was pretty typical.
All right.
Yeah,
that's
it was
just the
like
way
a love-hate relationship.
Okay.
Hate at work and love later.
Okay, all right.
You know, obviously when you're at work and you have employees, you tell them what to do. But they have emotions and feelings too. So again,
I'm still learning that.
I try to understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's still something that needs to be addressed, I make that a point.
Okay.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
But if I have to continually have to keep talking about it, then we need a change.
Right.
And if you can't change, then I need to make that change because the ultimate goal is for the business to bring in money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No projects. Employees, yes. Projects, no.
So as much as you need employees, you know, to make the circle complete, you can't be held hostage by them.
Right. Right. Yeah, I get it. I completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
What is the goal for your business over the course of the next, let's say, 5 years?
To grow a little bit more, expand, try to get a few more people in-house.
Okay.
Maybe get a showroom.
Okay. Is there a goal for the size that you're aiming to be? Or are you trying to be 500 people?
I'm open. Okay. I'm open for new ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, if it's going to work and we get big, awesome. If not, I'm comfortable.
Okay.
And we can just figure out how to maximize the business profits with who we have.
Sure. What would be some advice that you would give someone that was considering starting their own construction company?
Work with somebody else and figure out what they do wrong.
Okay. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Are you a book reader? Anything like that? Or where do you get your business knowledge from?
Just past experiences. I do read some articles here and there that catch my interest.
Okay. Is there anything that somebody told you, quote, sent you a book, something like that was just super inspiring? Fortune cookie, something?
Just one of my old bosses just gave me the old fork in the road conversation. You can go this way, you can go straight or go right. Which one do you choose?
Okay.
Obviously, you have bads and you have goods. So,
yeah. All right.
I've often found myself asking that question.
Okay.
In tough situations.
All right. What is the most difficult conversation that you've had to have?
With?
In business. Anything. Client, employee, anything.
That's a loaded question.
Well, it's one of those, so there's, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's fine.
But I feel like the construction industry, from my point of view, is all about communication, and the majority of the people in that industry are terrible at it.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. And I mean this, the suppliers, the people doing the work, the employees, the managers. It is rare that I see a construction company where I'm like,
yeah,
that's a solid, solid communication culture. And I feel like there's conversations that people have to have that a lot of times they just don't have.
Right.
Because maybe out of fear, or maybe they're just like, oh, I don't want to talk to that guy for whatever reason.
I think if I could have another person in-house that mm-hmm. would help that flow,
yeah,
the conversation flow
okay.
with clients, that would
be
huge.
The bad news person?
Yeah. You know, the tough conversations are telling your client, like, hey, I've got absolutely no control mm-hmm. over the subcontractor.
Okay.
And because their responsibility was to bring in that product,
mm-hmm.
and it's not here.
Oh.
So, like, that's a really hard conversation to have.
Sure.
So.
That is the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the conversations where you're like, hey, I'm sorry about this, but I have zero power to fix it.
Right.
And you're trying to figure out what avenue can I go through
right.
to try to solve it, but in the end, you don't.
Or if they don't pick their phone up.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes it really difficult because they're expecting the answer and you can't give it to them.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. That's tough. I get it.
I like to stay in everybody's ear as much as I can.
That's the name of the game.
So if you're going to ignore me, I'm going to call you 10 times.
Well, sometimes that's what you got to do, especially with vendors that aren't following through.
And I feel as a GC, it's kind of my duty to do that anyway.
I think that's I'm trying to think of an orchestra. Oh my gosh, you're the conductor, right?
Yeah.
So you got to just
right.
play the music.
Eventually they come to their senses and, you know, answer their phone.
All right. Is it tough to find subcontractors that do good work, communicate well, and aren't obnoxiously priced?
No, it's just I think they're in the same boat. Everybody is in our industry. The demand is so high right now, and, you know, it causes the people to shut down.
Shut down how so?
They don't want to communicate.
Okay.
That's one of the first things to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Like they just stop answering their phone?
They just need to focus on getting what they're doing done.
Okay.
And then come back to the phone call.
So they just give up?
Maybe.
Wow. Well, that's crazy. How do you work with that then?
I just keep calling them.
All right. Just keep bugging them.
Yeah.
We got a job to do, man.
Just give me an answer.
All right.
I need some feedback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have there ever been subcontractors where you had to be like, it's not working?
Yeah, unfortunately. And those are the ones who you would prepay a little bit.
Yeah.
So you know, now let's do your job. Or if we have a trusted relationship, it's easier to give money down. But money down is tough sometimes.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Cool. Well, Adam, I appreciate you being on the show. This has been super cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Adam, where can people find you?
AF Construction, LLC.com.
Okay. And your phone number? I'm going to put you on the spot here, right?
My phone number is 608-345-2879.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yep, thank you.
This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. If you're listening to this on the web or wherever you're listening to it, or watching it, I should say, if you could do me a huge favor, give it a thumbs up, comment, and of course, share it with your entrepreneurial friends. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering services for service businesses looking for growth on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for other businesses looking for growth on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners and viewers, as well as our guest, Adam from AF Construction. Adam, thanks for being on the show.
Yep, thank you.
Tell us the website one more time.
www.afconstructionllc.com.
Awesome. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, you know what to do. Enjoy your business.